Welcome to another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl, and I'm here today with Shannon Thornton, who is a licensed professional counselor, and her specialties are the treatment of ADHD, executive function disorders, and anxiety. She's here with the Chrysalis Behavioral Therapy and Counseling Group, and they are located right here in Frisco. And Shannon, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you have not just professional experience with ADHD.
Right.
You have seen this from the inside.
I live it.
Tell me about that.
I have two children. My daughter is 19 and my son is 16. And I first encountered ADHD with my daughter and found out later on that my husband actually has it, and my son, but they present very differently. And the reason that I specialize in this now is because of my daughter. I used to ask God, Lord, why would you give me such a difficult child to raise? By the way, she's awesome now. She's turned everything around. She's learned wonderful skills, and she's very, very happy and functional. Huh? When she was little, very difficult child to raise.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I didn't even think ADHD was a thing. I thought it was poor parenting, wild children. I called her behavior and her difficulties everything but ADHD until I finally just humbled myself to what I was really dealing with, and then everything changed.
Where were you professionally when you were navigating her early childhood?
I was a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So did this launch your career?
It did. It really did. Before I became a professional counselor, I worked for a large insurance company, and I did a lot of, we called it the psych ward of the business.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of helping with conflict management and communication between upper management levels, and helped them communicate and understand each other and work better together. I did a lot of team workshops, self-discovery workshops, professional development. And so I've always enjoyed helping people, and I've always enjoyed human behavior. But when my kids started getting older, I thought, what am I going to do now that I'm grown up? And the kids are getting more self-sufficient. And I really felt called to doing this. I started with, I did some practical parent education. I taught for the Plano school district for a while.
Okay.
I had my own business, Thornton Training Group, and I went to PTAs and moms groups and church groups and taught about parenting. But it took a while for me to kind of formulate where I am today.
Right.
But I owe it all to my daughter.
How interesting.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Well, what exactly, and perhaps the word is, what clinically is ADHD? When something becomes this part of conversation, it can mean absolutely something different than it should be meaning, or there's a spectrum. It could mean this to this, and we could be very confused about it and not know.
Right, and that's a really good question, because it presents differently in each individual. I knew my husband had funny little quirks. I knew that my daughter had an emotional emotional outbursts. And I didn't even realize my son had any difficulties really until he got into middle school, high school, because he has the inattentive type. So it does look different in every person. So it's hard sometimes to really diagnose. ADHD is a diagnosis that is used and given when all other diagnoses have been disproven. It's not this.
Yeah.
It's not that. It's this. And so ADHD, because it looks different in everybody, it does have some commonalities. That's going to be hyperactivity in some people, meaning that they're always busy. They're tapping their foot. It's when you're on the pew on Sunday mornings and your pew is jiggling, the guy down on the end, which is usually my husband, is jiggling it with his foot.
I was going to say, this is when my wife pokes me with a pen.
Puts her hand on your knee and says, honey. Yeah. Or the child who just cannot sit still, who's always getting up, distracted in school. The inattentiveness is not paying attention to details, spacing out, squirreling, if you will, in the middle of class, not remembering things. There's a lot of working memory problems. The inattentiveness, the impulsivity, saying and doing things that you really wish they hadn't said or done, and not really even being aware of their behavior as it pertains to other people and other children. So there's a social aspect to it as well, and having extreme mood swings. A lot of times, oh, they're bipolar. Oh, they have a mood disorder. Well, let's look further into that, because not necessarily, because I won't go into all the neurobiology of it, but they have a very hard regulating things. It's a disorder of regulation in the prefrontal cortex of your mind, and there's just not enough oxygen and blood going into that part of your brain to make it work properly. And so they can't regulate a lot of stuff. Emotions, time, organization, it's all in there.
So a person, a child, could have one of those, perhaps the six things, I don't know what whatever the number is that you just described. One, two, four, six. And those individually sound much like immaturity.
Yes.
Much like you got to, you know, put your nose to the grindstone. I mean, it could be, and it really could be. I mean, now, is this overdiagnosed or underdiagnosed? Because it's so confusing.
Yeah. I think because it's an observable decision, it's subjective. The way that we diagnose ADHD is not with a blood test. It's with observations. It's with self-report forms. It's with parent report forms, teacher report forms. And my biggest worry is when parents say, I can't control my kid. Here, doctor, put them on medication to calm them down. Because it could be parenting. It could be
It really could.
Yeah. So you never really know. But when you get, that's why it's important to talk to someone who is an expert in it, because I've come to people that, I've had people come to me that say, my kid has ADHD, you know, fix them.
Because they don't obey.
And it ends up that they are just a strong-willed child, but they have none of the other symptoms. So you've got to be able to delineate the difference and know what you're looking for. Use the proper diagnoses, use the proper tests and forms, and know the right questions. And in this circumstance, can they do this? And what does your environment look like? Because your environment can help you or hurt you.
So don't diagnose this on the internet.
Or with your
group of friends.
No, do not. Talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about. And you don't want to I think it's over-medicated. The studies show that cognitive behavioral therapy, which is what I do, along with medication, is the best form of treatment, because the medication will bring them up to a leveled playing field, so it makes their changes in behavior easier for them.
Doesn't erase all the stuff.
Yes.
It gets them to a fighting chance.
Yes. But they have to do the work, because the things that they have a hard time with, these things are innate to most people.
Yes.
You know, if you've got homework, you do it. But not if you have ADHD. It's harder.
To the medication question, would that medication get you to a level playing field? And as you learn coping mechanisms and understanding yourself and others, then the medication, is this a medication for the rest of your life?
Not necessarily. It really depends on the individual. I know people that have tried to wean off, and they try it out and see if it works. And this is the stimulant class I'm talking about, because this medication goes in your body and then out of your body. It's not like an SSRI or some type of mood stabilizer like a Zoloft or something like that, that you don't want to go off that by yourself. You need to wean that off, because that stays in your system and it can mess up your brain if you just go off cold turkey. But I've talked with people who have tried to go off of their stimulant medication with the skills they've learned, and they're like, hey, I can do this on my own. My daughter is one of those examples. She's totally fine now. Some people just go, you know what? I really need this extra help concentrating and focusing at work or at school. So I'm going to use this.
I have a friend who's an adult with children of his own now, and he felt as a child and teenager wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke to his parents about, I can't do what the kids are doing.
Wow.
I don't understand. They're like, yeah, you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a stigma. I'm not putting my kid on medication.
Right.
Or drugs if you're, really against it.
Right.
And he was in college, kind of under his own steam, and he went to someone, he's old enough, he's responsible for himself, and he was given, I think the first one didn't do much, mm-hmm. but the second treatment, he said, the world went from a 10 to a 6.
Wow.
He could understand what was going on around him. It was profound, and his whole childhood had been experienced without the benefit of that.
So hard on him, so difficult.
And I'll never forget that story. So that that was a kid who would have benefited greatly from a diagnosis,
yes,
and treatment earlier than he had it.
Absolutely.
One of the things I hear from school teachers is we have too many kids being medicated in our classes.
Yeah, I believe that.
So
probably are.
What is the flip side? What is if you're medicating kids who either over-medicating or medicating kids who really have some other issue that, somebody diagnosed them,
mm-hmm.
and somebody prescribed. Can you, I know you can over-medicate.
Sure. Well, and I think I know it's very difficult to find, I call it a cocktail, the right cocktail,
sure.
because each person presents differently. Different medicines last a certain number of hours, have different effects on people's brains. It's all brain chemistry. And if a child is properly medicated, it will change their world, like your friend.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not properly medicated, then it will make their life a lot harder. And only the child will, their behavior and their feedback with you and your doctor will be able to really help them understand what is helping and what is not. Like a lot of kids will go, I feel like a zombie, I'm not taking it anymore. And then they don't tell their parents.
Right.
Or they sell it because they can make money,
which
is another issue. It's another problem. Because if I don't have ADHD and I take the medicine, I am flying. I can do 100 things. It just gives me, it makes my brain work completely differently, mm-hmm. and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Especially for your heart.
Telltale signs, you touched on them already, of a child who is in need of help. I grew up in the 60s, and we just simply called kids, he's just hyper.
Yeah.
That was,
yep.
That was the depth.
Right.
You know. And it was just basically sit on him.
Yes. Tie him down.
And I had a friend who actually, he hurt someone, mm-hmm. And it got to be a legal deal. He really, could not control himself.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, the parents were, I know they were shamed.
Yeah.
So there's this stigma of bad parenting, and then there's a stigma of medication. And somehow you went from a not a good parent to, your gene pool is murky.
Right.
But if the proper diagnosis and the proper treatment, which may not come the first time.
The medication, right. It takes sometimes a couple different trials to figure out what's going to work best. So you have to be patient.
And what... to a teacher, a kid who's a zombie is better than who's swinging
yeah.
from the lights. So the teacher might be, I don't mean to disparage teachers at all, but at least he's controllable. That's a win. What's a good outcome of a good medication? Are we, you want to see the kid through their eyes.
Yes. You don't want a child to lose their spirit. You want to help control and help them control their will. And there's a big difference.
That's
and
interesting.
their impulse control. When you see a child who can't sit still, who is bugging their friend and talking to their friend, who's playing with things, who's in their seat, who has to get up and go to the bathroom 100,000 times, who interrupts the teacher all the time, who starts arguments or fighting or whatever like that in the school. These are some telltale signs that they're struggling. And if you see a child who distracts, that you have to redirect several times in the classroom, Johnny, pay attention. Johnny, right. Where's your paper? They lose things. All of that, those are all signs that they might be struggling. And if you give them medicine, you're going to see them, along with the skills that it takes. It takes work for them. There are different skills that you can learn to do things differently so that you're productive and successful. But the medication will, like your friend said, turn all the other noises and stimulants off to allow them to focus on one thing so that they can actually pay attention through an entire math problem, so that they can actually read a paragraph and understand it in order to answer a question. What's happening is we're sitting in a studio and there are sounds around, our stomachs might be growling, right. You know, I have an itch on my leg, and all these, we're constantly bombarded with stimulus. A person with ADHD, all those stimulants are coming at them at the same power,
right.
And they can't delineate between them. So it's really hard to give the right thing the right amount of attention. So with medicine and skills, they're going to be able to really focus, pay attention, remember their backpack, remember to pick things up, you know, keep control.
You've already said it very clearly, but I feel like it's worth camping on once more, at least, that the medication does not solve the problem.
Correct.
We want the kid to have a chance to learn how to navigate life.
Yes.
So medication without therapy is not the goal.
It is not. It's better than nothing if you can't make it to therapy, but it's still going to leave them feeling like I think your friend did, with that there's something wrong with me, there's mm-hmm. something different about me. And I will tell you that, I don't know about your friend, but a lot of kids get so many negative messages,
right.
About, gosh, you're so lazy.
Right.
Why can't you do this? What's wrong with you? That their self-esteem is impacted to the point that they develop much more predisposed to alcoholism,
right.
food eating disorders, drug addiction, sexual problems, because they need to get their esteem from somewhere, and they know there's something missing, but they can't really put their finger on it. So the medicine will help in some regard, but if they don't learn those skills, they're going to live the rest of their lives with a void. And I had a patient just the other day that I was seeing her for one thing, and we realized that all of the self-talk she was doing, all of the truths and beliefs she had about herself, were because of childhood and younger aged negative feedback, because of her executive functioning deficits, and she ended up doing some really bad stuff,
right.
To cope with it, and she never learned the skills, but it was awakening, and it was like a bomb dropped off in the office, and I was
right.
so happy for her.
Wow. So you, normally I would say, so figuratively, we've got a parent who's dealing with an ADHD child. The parent has their own kind of constellation of emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately for us, that's you. You were there, and what was some of the, what were you flooded with? What were you afraid of? Some of these parents might be afraid to step into acknowledging that this is in fact what my kid might be dealing with, because it would be embarrassing, or what have you.
Yeah.
What is it like for the parent to be discovering that they are the parent of a ADHD child?
That is such a good question. The first word that comes to my mind is isolating. If you find yourself talking to your friends, does your kid do this? Oh my gosh, what should I do about Johnny? He's doing that. And your friend's like, my kid doesn't do that. You start realizing that your child is behaving differently than others. Most of the time, people with ADHD are 3 to 5 years behind in their maturity, in their social maturity, their emotional maturity, not physical, but emotional and social. And so if you don't feel like you can talk to anybody about it,
right,
and you feel like, what am I doing wrong? What have I done to create this child who can't do these things? Why is my child so lazy? Why is my child so forgetful? Why does my child freak out about the smallest things when their reaction is not even remotely congruent with the event?
Right.
And you feel like you're doing something wrong, and it's embarrassing. And then you're afraid for your child. You notice that your child is not keeping friends. You notice that your child is annoying to other children, other people, is not being invited to things. Then you hurt for your child. There's a lot of things. You realize that the teacher is annoyed with them, and they're getting a lot of negative feedback at school, and that you're yelling at them all the time. I said some stuff to my kids that I wish I could take back because I didn't understand. But they know that now, and they've forgiven me, I think.
Well, and as I'm often talking with parents, we have signed up to make mistakes by procreating.
Yes.
So the goal is not to not make mistakes, but to address them once they have. And most of the time that can be done sometime later. Sooner is better. But you do get to clean stuff up.
Absolutely. And it's never too late. I used to think it's too late.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they learn these skills in high school. I have a patient that I didn't start seeing until he started college, because oftentimes people with executive function disorders, which is all the ADHD, all those, the regulation in the prefrontal cortex, that stuff, they're super, super smart. Their IQ is over the top.
That's true of my friend.
Yes, and so that intelligence is helping them compensate with school academically. And so they get to college and like, holy cow, I don't have a teacher calling me or texting me to tell me to do something. Or, wow, my mom's not here to wake me up to get me to class.
Right.
And it hits them. Mm-hmm. There's usually a wall at third grade when the STAR tests start, or sixth grade or ninth grade when there's a huge transition, or then when you get into college.
Just the complexities.
Yes, because things start getting harder and our students are becoming more independent and there's more stuff to keep track of. Mm-hmm. And that's the hard stuff.
So when it begins to dawn on you that you may be in another category, what did you do?
Well, I denied it for a long time. I denied it and said, well, it's because she's gifted and talented.
Yeah.
Because,
and it's true.
And yep. And I will tell you, gifted and talented kids, they are wired differently. You know, if you look at a standard deviation bell chart, you've got most people are in the big bell and kind of on the chunk of it.
Mm-hmm.
Gifted and talented kids are in that they're outliers.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're sometimes quirky. They look at the world in a completely different way. And so I blamed it on that.
Right.
They're also highly emotional.
Artistic.
And artistic and creative and all the. But it just, so I denied it for a long time. The biggest lesson I've learned is not to isolate, research, talk to an expert, and the biggest thing is acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptance that your child has this learning difference. Accept that your child is going to be okay regardless of when you catch it. Don't blame yourself for not catching it earlier. Don't blame yourself for saying things that you wish you hadn't. Focus on what you can do for them now.
That's just shockingly practical.
It worked for me. It hurts along the way, but it works.
And at some point, you determined, this is more than I can manage. What was your first step, and what were you feeling when you actually reached out for Ike's professional help?
I went to our pediatrician, and he gave us the Conners.
How old was she?
She was in the sixth grade.
Okay.
I want to say that maybe fourth or fifth grade, we put her on a mood stabilizer because she could not regulate her emotions. Mm-hmm. Everything was so dramatic. You know, when she was a little girl, she'd fall down and skin her knee, and she screamed so loud, you'd think that an appendage had fallen off. The neighbors came, just so discongruent with what's really happening. So sixth grade, because I noticed that she just wouldn't turn in stuff in on time. She was really struggling with understanding things. She was having problems with friends. I mean, everything was just a mess. And so I talked to our pediatrician, and he gave us the Connors test. It's a self-report and teacher and parent score. Hmm. Vanderbilt does the same thing. I use something called the CEFI. It's the Comprehensive Executive Functioning Inventory. They're all basically the same thing. Mine focuses more on executive function specifically. Theirs is more geared towards school. Okay. But, huge overwhelming response of, yeah.
Okay.
She is using a Sharpie in math or crayons because she can't remember her pencil.
Right.
Or she left her jacket in my classroom again. And it wasn't fun. No parent wants their child to have a struggle of any kind. So it was not fun for us. She didn't want to take her medicine. She felt different. She was upset about it.
So the pediatrician was your first kind of, I need help.
Yes.
And he then, with this test, then you were, you won.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we did really well on this.
Yes. Wow. Look how great you scored
on
this.
Yes. That's
5 on everything.
So then what happened?
So then we got her the medication, and because I am neurotypical, which means I don't have ADD or ADHD, I was able to give her tips and hints on how I do my life. And because I'm extremely organized, and that's just something that's really easy for me. So I helped her learn the skills. Back then, I don't know if they had behavioral therapists that knew enough about ADHD and how to help it. So I kind of did it myself. I used a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went and got her. I want to say we used our pediatrician for the stimulant, and then we went to a psychiatrist so we could combine all the medic, just a one-stop shop.
And was that a relief for you, or was that, oh gosh, we're in deep now?
I thought, oh my gosh, my kid's going to a shrink. Yeah. And that didn't make me happy either. But
so this was a series of challenges emotionally for you to hurdle, and yet you did.
Yes, it's acceptance. It's not, oh no, it's because it starts as a parent, you're like, what did I do wrong? And oh, it's embarrassing for me. It's not about you. It's about, what does my child need from me? It's my job to help my child. So take me out of the picture. What's going to help them? And once I was able to do that, I did a lot of praying too.
Mm-hmm.
And then the acceptance part really came together for me. And those taking her to a psychiatrist who really knew what was going on and could manage and make sure her weight wasn't going down and make sure her blood pressure and her heart was all good all along the way, it just all worked out.
And could you tell pretty quickly that this was beginning to help, or
yes,
did it take a while?
What's
common?
The stimulant, most people, when your child is on the right medication at their right dose, it is night and day. If they're a zombie, it's the wrong medicine.
Right.
If they take a stimulant that when it starts wearing off at about 3 or 4 o'clock and they come home and they are just mad as a wet hen, it's not the right medication. Or they need an extra something in there. If it's not working, you'll know. But if it is working, they will be less frustrated. They'll be able to function better at school. They'll be less emotionally charged. They'll be able to listen. They'll be willing to listen. And if you take them off for the weekend and you go, oh man, yeah, you're going back on it Monday, brother, or you're going to be on it all summer.
Fast.
It's in and out of your system.
Okay.
So yeah, you got to have that dose every morning.
And how did she feel? Was she like, this is Good.
Once we found the right thing, yeah. It took two or three different trials and errors. There's something called pharmacogenetics. It's a hard word to say. But it is this a great new test that I can run in my office. It's free to them to get it from me. It's just a swab of the inside of your cheeks, and you stick it in a tube, and you send it off to a lab, and they send you back a list, and then you pay for it through your insurance or self-pay, whatever you deal with them. But I can give you the kit. Mm-hmm. And it outlines for you, based on your DNA, so you keep it for a lifetime because your DNA doesn't change. Mm-hmm. These are the medications that work well for me for pain medication, for psychotropics, which is your, you know, your brain, your mm-hmm. mental stuff, for cardiac medication, and there's one more I can't remember, but it helps doctors determine what your DNA works with. For example, if we had had that a long time ago, we would not have had the trouble that we did. We went from Adderall to Focalin thinking, well, let's try that because it's a different family of stimulant. My daughter just curled up in a ball and cried like she's completely out of control. And we had to take her to Children's Emergency Room because we thought, oh my gosh, what is happening? And once the medicine wore off, she was fine. So not saying that that's what Focalin will do to your child. That's right, not it at all. It did not work for her. If we had known in advance that that was not the family of medication that worked for her, we would have not had to deal with that.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, it like gives you a green light, a red light, and a yellow light on medications. Huh. It's brilliance.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
So she started to feel in control of herself,
mm-hmm.
wanting to participate and capable of participating.
Yes.
And then she had to learn, she had to do the work.
Yes.
What did that look like?
Well, there's a component of ADHD that most people don't realize, and I call them domains. So you've got your organization, your time management, but one of the domains that people don't know about or talk about often is that of motivation and initiation. And it's that part of us that says, man, you're so lazy, why aren't you doing that? People with ADHD are not motivated to do something that does not interest them because they don't have the right dopamine receptors in their brains, which is that reward juice that squirts off in mm-hmm. your brain when something feels really good or mm-hmm. you do really well and you want to do it again. They don't have that working for them. So doing their homework, they get nothing out of it.
Right.
So they're not going to do something unless they want to do it. So it took a while for my daughter to decide that that is what she wanted to do. It is like if you put a wet noodle on a counter and you try to pull it, you can kind of pull it, mm-hmm. but there's no pushing it.
Mm-hmm.
Your kid's not going to do what they don't want to do. And it means if it means them failing, it means them failing.
Right.
You know, if it means them going to community college first instead of going off to a four-year university, which is what my daughter did, fantastic. Mm-hmm. She did okay in high school because she didn't really find it very exciting or necessary, which wore me out
mm-hmm.
in college. She was invited to be in all of the honor societies in college, got a scholarship to her university, because now her brain is kicking in. She wants to do it, and she can use the intellect the Lord gave her, mm-hmm. and things are working great. But it's when she decided, when she had success to draw from, all you can do is put the tools in front of them, give them the medication. When it starts working, they try it. Then they'll decide to do it. But again, they're behind in their maturity. It may take them longer. Accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Work with them, not against them. And the more you push, the more they're not going to do it.
Right. Yeah, we've all, you know, that's the underachiever or the...
Yeah.
You can't... How could they not be alarmed?
Right.
That they're failing.
And yeah.
They're not. And... So the parents need medication.
Yes, that too. It doesn't hurt
so,
to deal with that.
Well, what a remarkable story that you have and have gone through and your daughter, and she's out there dealing with the world, and that's very hopeful.
It is. I think that's why I do this. It's because I want to give parents and kids something that I didn't have, uh-huh. to save them from my own mistakes, to let them know they're not alone. I've got moms in my office crying, oh my gosh, you get it.
Yeah.
Because you feel so isolated.
Yes.
So yeah, you're not alone. And there's a lot of hope, a lot of very successful people. You just have to learn the skills and understand it.
Well, this has been very, very interesting and I think very helpful to a lot of people. So you're with the Chrysalis Behavioral Therapy and Counseling Center.
Yes.
And the phone number there is 214-532-7158. Thank you, Shannon. This was really fascinating.
Oh, and you're welcome. I love talking about it.
And
love it, helping you.
And it's just, I mean, we are awash as we're getting ready to close down here. Is this occurring more than it used to, or are we diagnosing it more and better, or is there any way to even know?
I think a little bit of both. You know, we all remember that kid or a handful of mm-hmm. kids when we were little that we just thought, oh, she's dingy, oh, he's hyper, whatever, and we just all functioned okay. My husband, he's like, I've got ADD, I did fine,
right.
but we raise our children differently now, and there are a lot of more things in our environment that we are ingesting, putting on our skin, putting in our bodies, that have chemicals in them that are affecting our brain chemistry. And so I think our environment has a lot to do with the increased problems that we have. I also think that kids have a lot more distractions to take mm-hmm. them away from the things that you and I would just run outside and play with a rock and a stick and some mm-hmm. friends and call it a day. And now kids have so many sports, they're overscheduled. They've got to be the best music player, sports player, academician, and, you know, be a volunteer and get 100 hours. And oh, by the way, I've got this wonderful thing in front of me called a phone or an iPad that's constantly demanding my attention. And so they're not learning how to pay attention as it is because of the environment that we live in our society today. So there's a lot of things going against them that were not going against us before. But I do think that it's the environment and just what we're ingesting is also making a difference too.
Well, this is very interesting. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be with us.
Thank you for having me.
It was a pleasure. This has been another episode of the Parenting Pathway Podcast. This is Pastor Dave Carl. Thank you, Shannon Thornton, for being with us today. And we wish you and your daughter the best. What a great story. I'm so glad that we were able to hear that with you today.
Thank you.
We'll see you all next time. And remember, don't do life and don't do parenting by yourself.